Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 58. Krishna marries five princesses. Text number 31. Rad Rajati Devyastanayam Mitravindam Pichasasu Rasaya Hitavan Krishna Vajan Ragyam Prabhasyatam of Queen Raja Di Devi Taniyam, the daughter Mitravindam Mitravinda Picha of his father, Sasu of the sister, Kasiya forcibly, Ritavan took away, Krishna, Lord Krishna, Rajan, O King Parikshit, Ragyam, the kings, Prabhasyatam, as they watched. Translation. My dear King, Lord Krishna forcibly took away Princess Mitravinda, the daughter of his aunt Rajadi Devi, before the eyes of the rival kings. I'll just read the last text from yesterday. Vinja and Anuvinja, who shared the throne of Avanti, were followers of Duryodhana's. When the time came for their sister Mitravinda to select her husband in the Swayamvara ceremony, they forbade her to choose Krishna, although she was attracted to him. And today's verse, my dear King, Lord Krishna forcibly took away Princess Mitravinda, the daughter of his aunt Rajadi Devi, before the eyes of the rival kings. Nagna jinna makoshalara siddrajiti dharmika tasya satcha bhavatkanya devignajiti nripa. O King, Nagnajit, the very pious king of Kosala, had a lovely daughter named Satcha or Nagnajiti. Natham sako nripa vodham jitva sapta gobrishan Tikshna Shingansu Dhudashan Virya Gandasahan Kalan. The kings who came as suitors were not allowed to marry her unless they could subdue seven sharp horned bulls. These bulls were extremely vicious and uncontrollable, and they could not tolerate even the smell of warriors. So this begins the story of Krishna marrying Satcha, who is also known as Nagnajiti. So far, Krishna, of course, had 16,108 wives, of whom we have heard of the first being Rukmini, and then he married Chambavati, and then he married Satyabhama, and then Kalindi, and then Mitravinda, and now we're discussing Satcha, the sixth. Tam Shutva Brisha Jhillabhyam Bhagavan Sat Vatampati Jagama Kosalya Purham Sanyana Mahata Britta. Who knows the last two? Lakshman and Lakshmana. Lakshmana. So there's one more, we haven't mentioned one more wife of Krishna of his 16,108, his eight principal wives that he married first. So we've mentioned seven. One more. That's what would be. Yeah. Bhadra. Bhadra. Tam shutva brisha jillabhya bhagavan sattvatam bhati jhagama kosalya param sanyana mahata brita. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the master of the Vaishnavas, heard of the princess who was to be won by the conqueror of the bulls, he went to the capital of Kosalya with a large army. Sa kosala pati pitaha pachyutana sanadibi arhanena pi guru na pujayam pati nandita. The king of Kosala, pleased to see Lord Krishna, worshipped him by rising from his throne and offering him a seat of honour and substantial gifts. Lord Krishna also greeted the king respectfully. Of course, Krishna is understanding that this will be his future father-in-law. So he's also very respectful. Param vilokya vimatam samagatam harendra kanya chakamiramapatim huyad hayam me patir shisho nalaha karotu satchari medrito vrataha. When the king's daughter saw the most agreeable suitor arrive, she immediately desired to have him, the lord of goddess Rama. She prayed, "May he become my husband. If I have kept my vows, may the sacred fire bring about the fulfillment of my hopes." So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions that she was peering through the sort of lattice work of the windows, and she saw Krishna there from her castle. So she was praying, "May he become my husband. If I have kept my vows, may the sacred fire bring about the fulfillment of my hopes." Yat pada pankaja raja sadasa bhibharati shri rabja jasa girishaha saha luka palai ila tanu sva kitasetu paripsaya iha kalhe dadahatsa bhagavan mama kinna tushit. Goddess Lakshmi, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and the rulers of the various planets place the dust of his lotus feet on their heads. And to protect the codes of religion which he has created, he assumes pastime incarnations at various times. How may that Supreme Personality of Godhead become pleased with me? So here, Satcha Nagnajiti, she is thinking that Krishna is so great that how will it be possible for me to actually serve the Lord? So this is a very, very nice attitude in devotional service. In fact, this is the attitude of devotional service. there shouldn't be another. that, you know, she is feeling Krishna, she describes here that Goddess Lakshmi, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva and the rulers of the various planets place the dust of his lotus feet on their heads. So she is recognizing that he is the most exalted personality. And, you know, even the greatest of demigods are somehow trying to also please Krishna, and they're showing him the utmost respect, reverence, and devotion by placing the dust from his lotus feet upon their heads. And then she goes on to say that to protect the codes of religion which he has created, he assumes pastime incarnations at various times. So he is the he has created all the laws that exist within throughout the material world. Whatever codes of religion, whatever living entities are forced to enact, just like in the animal species of life, the different animals are forced to act by the various laws of nature. And in human form of life, the living beings are given some little bit of independence, but they're expected to voluntarily follow the laws of religion set down by God. Most people live in great fear of God. He is. For most people who accept the position of God, there is, great fear and respect. That if you don't follow the laws of God, there will be all hell to pay, so to say. So, he is not a person to be messed with or to take lightly. He is a very, very exalted personality. So here, Satya is appreciating his position. And, it is him, that same person, and she's thinking, well, now he has appeared in his original form as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He appears in so many different incarnations. There's Lord Ramchandra, Lord Nrisingadev, Buddha, all unlimited different incarnations to re-establish religious principles throughout all time, throughout all history, for all different types of people of all different faiths. Actually, whether someone follows the Vedic literatures or not, it doesn't matter. They're still following a representative of God. The Christians are following a representative of Krishna. The Muslims are following, a representative of Krishna. The Buddhists are following a representative of Krishna. The Mayavadis are following a representative of Krishna. The impersonalists are following a representative of Krishna. Even the atheists get their philosophy from, someone that Krishna has sent with some bewildering philosophy. So, he appears in all different incarnations, and yet here she's understanding that he has appeared in his original form. So she is, although she's peering from her castle window through the lattices and seeing, here is this most perfect person, male person, Krishna, that I will marry. But it's not just based upon some initial, fleeting bodily attraction, so to say. And definitely, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But she's understanding everything that Krishna represents, or that Krishna is. She's understanding, of course, that Krishna, appears in so many different incarnations, including the Vishnu incarnations, who literally manifest the material world. And all the various incarnations come through Lord Vishnu. She is understanding all these things, that he is the incarnations of Brahma, who creates the material world under Lord Vishnu's direction, Shiva, who destroys it at certain intervals under the direction of Vishnu. These are all different representatives of Krishna. So she's understanding. This whole material world is existing on his energy. See, all the different incarnations, all the different expansions, that is Krishna. So she's understanding the whole material world, that is all existing on his energy. The whole spiritual world, that is all existing on his energy. And so she's rightfully thinking that how am I, you know, to please Krishna? She's not this is the proper mentality. Srila Prabhupada, actually in the Krishna book, he quotes the fifth verse of the Shishastakam. Ayananda tunuja kinkaram paditamam vishamne bhavam vado kripaya tadu parapam kajasti tuduli sadrusam vichintaya. To summarize, you know, this mood of Satya, that O son of Maharaj Nanda, because Krishna, Lord Chaitanya is addressing Krishna as the son of Nanda Maharaj, because he knows that Krishna likes to be addressed in relationship with his devotees. O son of Nanda Maharaj, somehow or other I have fallen into this ocean of birth and death. You please pick me up and place me as one of the atoms at your lotus feet. Srila Prabhupada actually expresses it in a slightly different way in the Krishna book. He says that, I'm trying to remember exactly how he says it, that, you know, if you please deliver, you know, this eternal servant of yours who is so fallen, you know, I will be eternally grateful, eternally thankful, like that. So, you know, that word sometimes we can jump over. But in that verse, O son of Nanda Maharaj Krishna, I have fallen into the ocean of birth and death. Please, please pick me up. There's no, there are no demands. You know, the proper mood in devotional service is Krishna is completely free. He may answer our prayers, he may not, that is completely up to him. And if he does, it is only by his causeless mercy that he reciprocates with the devotees. It's not that because if we do our service that Krishna is, you know, I'd chant my rounds, you know, and I've cleaned out the pot shed and I've, you know, brought in $100 this week, you know. So I think Krishna owes me a big one, you know. You know, when I want something, I'll call on a favour, sort of thing. Krishna's never obligated by, you know, any amount of service we do. And we should never, ever feel that, you know, I have done so much service, I'm in a position now to make demands, you know. Now I am, I've done so much service, I'm so elevated that now I'm in a position as a devotee, I can make so many demands on Krishna. Like that. If we do that, we cannot follow in the footsteps of Krishna's pure devotees. That sort of motivated devotional service is a symptom that our devotional service is still very much hampered by our association with the modes of material nature. And in order to perform pure devotional service, the service has to be unmotivated. It has to be if service is performed, generally, if devotional service is performed and yet a devotee is still very influenced by the modes of ignorance, then their devotional, mood can be one of, executing devotional service in a grudging mood or, you know, in an angry mood. They may often be disturbed with, you know, their surroundings and all the other devotees. You know, there's some aggressiveness and anger and bitterness and what have you. You know, so that sort of, or that there may be enviousness, sometimes to devotee influenced by the mode of ignorance, you know, that may be, you know, enviousness may influence their devotional service. So that's not very good. If someone's influenced by the mode of passion and they're trying to perform devotional service, then of course they're very much expecting some result, some reward, some profit, some attention. You know, doesn't everyone recognize that, you know, I'm a budding pure devotee? So, if one is performing devotional service influenced by the mode of goodness, you know, one may be very desirous from their devotional service of gaining, you know, peace and tranquility, like that. Of course, that is sometimes very difficult when you're doing Sankirtan on Burke Street or, you know, what have you. But the devotee who's actually executing pure devotional service, there's no motivations and there's no influence by the modes of passion, ignorance or goodness. And that verse, which Srila Prabhupada quoted in the Krishna book for this particular mood, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually describes that that particular fifth verse represents the level of a shakti, you know, in devotional service, which is, you know, for each of the eight verses of the Shishastikam, they represent different stages from, you know, Shraddha to Prema, and that particular verse represents a shakti, which means that a devotee has become perfect in the practice of sadhana bhakti, and they are a mature majjhima adhikari and not influenced by the lower modes of material nature, and they are a, you know, on the big threshold of uttama bhakti, you know, pure devotional service. Because they're, by and large, they've risen above the modes of material nature. At that point, the Sudasattva Shakti, the Lord's spiritual energy, has not fully descended, so they're not completely on the Vasudeva platform of, you know, Sudasattva, without any tinge of the modes at all. Krishna's internal, on the bhava platform actually, the next level, which, you know, comes quite quickly generally, you know, when devotees are performing devotional service properly, then the actual Krishna's internal spiritual potency, the Sudasattva, Sudasattva, which is a combination of the Ladini potency, Krishna's pleasure potency, and Krishna's sambit, knowledge potency, descends upon the heart. The sambit potency, of course, reveals the Lord and the to the devotee, and the Ladini potency allows them to perform ecstatic, loving devotional service to Krishna. But even on that Ashakti platform, you know, that is the beginnings of Uttama Bhakti, or pure devotional service. And to perform that, one has to be free from any... at that platform, also, this particular verse is synonymous with a devotee realizing their eternal constitutional position. So, at that stage, the devotee understands that I am the eternal servant of Krishna. He fully understands it, fully, you know, it's there. He may not, as in the bhava stage, you know, understand, oh, I am this particular, you know, I have this particular spiritual form and name. He may not know that, but he is has shrewd siddhi in the sense that he fully understands, he or she, they fully understand that they are the eternal servant of Krishna. Tiny little speck of spiritual dust, duly. And therefore, they're free from all other designations. And of course, one cannot perform devotional service until one comes to that platform of freedom from all different designations. If our conception is anything other than I am Krishna's eternal servant, it's not possible to perform pure devotional service. If we are thinking, I might be Krishna's eternal, servant, spirit soul. At the same time, I'm enjoying being Gangasvara or, Bhaktin so and so or, Bhakta so and so. If we have some concept of who we think we are in this material world, I am Australian, I am Indian, I am male, I am female, all these different designations, then we will act. We will be forced to act according to those designations. We will serve those designations. If we think I am male, I am female, we will act and serve that designation. Only when we come to the point of understanding I am Krishna's eternal spiritual servant and have no other conception than that, then we can perform pure devotional service. So this is the mood of Satya, in fact all the pure devotees of the Lord. It is a mood of devotional service. The whole process of devotional service, there cannot be a mood of demands or challenge, but the whole process is submissiveness. And because the very word bhakti is derived from the word bhaja, and bhaja means service. So bhakti, the very essence of the meaning is service. And the very essence of service is, submissiveness. And that being the servant is the opposite of being the master. So if a devotee, the more they try to please Krishna in a very humble service attitude by becoming just a simple, humble servant of the spiritual master and of the Vaishnavas, and of the Lord, then the more they make a huge advancement in devotional service. And there is no other way. We can never understand Krishna by any other process. If we try to understand Krishna that I won't develop a submissive mood and I'll just skip all the service, I'll just go and read the books, I'll read all the books by, the six Goswamis, and Śrīla Viśvanātha Chakravarti Thakura and Jaya Dev. I'll just go and read the intimate pastimes of Radha Krishna. I'll really understand, why do all the service? Let's just, get into the, some of these books, it's all there. If we try and skip that mood of service and submissiveness and try and understand Krishna, we will never understand Krishna. Who can understand Krishna? Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everything about him is unlimited. Everything about him is transcendental. Our experience of transcendental, we have the slightest, little concept of transcendental by understanding our own spiritual nature, that we are not this body. Apart from that, our experience at the moment is forgotten of transcendence. How can we really understand Krishna, he is transcendental, all his qualities are transcendental and unlimited. He has unlimited associates. He has unlimited pastimes. He has unlimited forms. He has unlimited activities. He appears in unlimited different moods. We can't even understand his dealings with the material world. It's very, very difficult. What to speak of his dealings in the spiritual world? What to speak of, to somehow, for someone, if we are, cannot become free from lust, greed, anger, like that, how is it possible to understand pure spiritual dealings based upon pure love? So, you know, it is not possible to actually enter into devotional service, enter into Krishna consciousness without submissiveness and, you know, just becoming a humble servant of the Guru, and becoming a humble servant of the Vaishnavas, and of the Lord. If we somehow think that we're going to get around that, there is no hope. And that is why, apart from the devotees, no one can understand Krishna. Apart from, you will see, the only people you will ever meet who can understand something, what is available to understand about the Supreme Lord, are submissive devotees. Apart from that, you will see, you know, fools. That's a fact. And, you know, but just by performing devotional service, Krishna, he actually reveals to the devotees, just like Hanuman, we read, you know, previously, that Krishna, he likes to fight. He has a sporting attitude. In the spiritual world, you know, there's no one to bash up. You don't want to bash up all these devotees in the spiritual world. They're such nice people. You know? And they don't want to bash up Krishna. They don't want to bash up God. So sometimes, you know, he comes to this world to bash someone up. That's where we get the propensity ourselves. Everything comes from God. So he wanted, you know, he just wanted to have a little bit of a play fight. He doesn't really want to hurt him. He just wanted to have a bit of a play fight. So he thought, I will go and see, you know, my devotee Hanuman. He's a really good fighter. So of course, when he approached Hanuman, Hanuman thought, oh, he's going to take that toy, that jewel, Shamantaka jewel that I gave to, you know, Jambavan, who am I saying? Hanuman, yeah. That's right, Jambavan, sorry. Yeah. So Jambavan saying, you know, he's going to take that Shamantaka jewel. So, and he's disturbing my boy. So he got really angry because of attachment. At that point, because of his anger and his attachment, as he was sort of representing the materialist. And when there is that anger and material attachment, then he couldn't recognize the Lord. See? On that platform, when there's all the material qualities, you have no access into spiritual. So he was representing that. So then he was fighting, he was punching Krishna, and Krishna was punching him, and they were smashing rocks over each other's heads. Having a real good time. Krishna became really satisfied. Oh, I'm enjoying this, you know. That's that. So he became really satisfied. When he became really satisfied, then he was pleased with his devotee, and then he immediately allowed Jambavan to understand, oh, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that's how it works. So you do some devotional service, any devotional service, and when the Lord becomes pleased, he lets you understand, oh, here is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and here is the process that, you know, this is how to execute pure devotional service, and, you know, this is how to associate nicely with devotees. Everything becomes, you know, very, very crystal clear when there's that service. Without that service, it's not possible. And we see here also, even Satyajit, you know, Satyajit caused a lot of trouble to Krishna. And, you know, after that he felt very, very sad and ashamed that, you know, I have disturbed Krishna and everybody in Dwarka. And so he really wanted to actually, he sincerely wanted to fix the problem. And because of that, you know, wanting to serve Krishna like that, Krishna inspired him within the heart, then I will offer my daughter, Satyabhama, to Krishna. And so Krishna was pleased at that. So, but that inspiration, how to serve, how to engage in service, he offered Krishna the Satyabhama, his beautiful daughter, who is actually the real jewel. And he also offered, you know, the Shamantaka jewel. Of course, unfortunately, because Satyajit had actually offended all the Vaishnavas in Dwarka, he was actually still had to die. He ended up getting killed, right? So which is a big lesson, that we can't just, you know, if we really want to please Krishna, we can't actually please Krishna and at the same time be unsubmissive or, you know, rough with Krishna's devotees. Being submissive to Krishna means also being, you know, very careful, always trying to serve Krishna's devotees like that. You can't just say, oh, I'll be real humble with Krishna, I'll serve Krishna, I'll treat his devotees like dogs. Krishna, and that's the example with Satyajit, that he really wanted to try and please Krishna, and Krishna accepted. Now, that's the nature of Krishna. Krishna is so kind that he doesn't actually consider the faults. You know, if there's some big faults in our devotional service, and that, you know, we've done so many things, Krishna doesn't, he's so liberal. He just considers, you know, he is performing his devotional service, he, you know, pleased. But unfortunately, even though Krishna is pleased, it doesn't absolve one if one has offended Krishna's devotees. Then the dust of the lotus feet of those devotees literally, you know, ruins that offender. So we have to be very careful. So, you know, to have a proper attitude of devotional service to Krishna and his devotees, and then everything in devotional service becomes very, very easy to execute, very easy to understand. We know exactly, you know, we can feel and understand and experience this wonderful, you know, loving relationship with the Supreme Lord and his devotees. I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or...